Well, if you're looking for compelling evidence of global warming right on our doorstep, how about this? Tāku, a tiny isolated Pacific island northeast of Papua New Guinea, is sinking. Earlier this year, a high tide washed right over it. Now, its few hundred residents have no choice but to leave. If that's a major upheaval for any society, it's an even bigger one for the residents of Tāku, who still practice religion and traditions almost untouched by the modern world. The story is to be captured on film by a New Zealand documentary crew who are heading to the island next week. The director is Briar March, and she joins me now, along with Richard Moyle, who is the director of the University of Auckland's Centre for Pacific Studies. He's also an ethnomusicologist and an anthropologist. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, good morning.
Hi.
Richard, where exactly is this island, and describe it to us.
Well, go to Papua New Guinea, go to Bougainville and turn right. That's about 200 kilometres off the east coast of Bougainville. It's an atoll, a lagoon about 7 kilometres across. There's a single village of about 600 people on an island about the size or height of your desk, and so small you can throw a stone into the water from pretty much wherever you stand. There's 12 rows of houses with thatched roofs and mat walls, paths of coral sand, and about 100 canoes on blocks at each end.
It's very hard to visualize something that's so close to sea level. And literally, it was a wave went right over this island.
There was a king tide earlier this year, and it swept right over, yes.
How long has it been sinking?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how you'd know, but the photographs taken in the 1970s and 80s that I've seen show a lot more above water than there is now.
By a lot more, how much more? Are we talking still quite minute amounts of movement? It's always been very flat, so to speak.
Well, yes. Atolls, by definition, are flat. And, in fact, there's no word for mountain in the local language. But a metre and a half would be the height above sea level perhaps 20 years ago. Now it's, by my estimation, 700, 800 millimetres above. It's not high.
What is your association with Tāku being?
I went there in 93, and I've gone back seven or eight times since there. The community asked for a permanent record of the parts of their culture that they valued. High school students leave for up to 5 years and to attend high school off the island, and they get an academic education at the expense of a cultural one. So 2 years ago, I published the first book in Tāku language of the oral tradition. I requested a CD last year. There's a book on history and culture coming out next year. I wrote another book on history and prehistory, but they changed their mind about that at the last moment, and currently I'm working on a dictionary.
How would you describe the people and the society that you've met there?
It's a Polynesian-speaking society, because the people believe ultimately they came from Samoa. For religious reasons, they don't allow any digging, no archaeology is allowed, but on the basis of linguistics, such a migration could conceivably have happened 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. But they are Polynesian in appearance, and certainly the practices are Polynesian.
And what are those practices? I'm interested that you're an ethnomusicologist, which I assume to do is to do with what, the musical traditions of a society, or...?
Yes, well done. It's a horribly long word. These people, there are about 180 adults, and I started recording in 93, and I stopped after recording 1,000 songs, and thought this is a little bit ridiculous, and I stopped recording and started joining in my own bumbling way. You've got between 20 and 30 hours of singing and dancing every week. Much of this is fueled by an inexhaustible and free supply of coconut toddy, which pushes things along nicely. You've got arguably one of the last remaining places in Polynesia where traditional religion is still practiced, and that's because of a ban the community put in the 1950s on missionaries and churches. So you have the Ariki, and that's what he's called, still the supreme religious leader, and instead of relying on the fading memories of older people from their childhood days for details of religion, you can step out your doorway and see it in practice on land and sea every day.
Let's bring in Briar here. your interest in this, obviously we're hearing of the music and the traditions, you're going to record it before these people go.
Yeah, that's right. And I also see that there's a time of dramatic change for the community, and especially with the incursion of Christianity, it's creating a lot of conflicts. So I'm quite interested in recording some of those conflicts as well.
And what do you mean, historically or do you mean now? Because they've
now
had this ban.
Yeah.
So what's happening now?
Now that you're seeing lots of tensions within the community surrounding values to do with Christianity and the traditional religion, and at the same time this island's going down, so I see it as a time of dramatic change for the community, and I'm really interested in the way that they are responding and coping with that change.
How would you describe it as a community? Is it like a modern Pacific Island community that we are familiar with islands close to New Zealand?
I think that's probably something that Richard can answer better than me, because I actually haven't been there
yet.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, I think that, you know, this community is an example maybe of many other atolls in the future that will be sinking because of climate change. So I see this story could actually show people what could happen in the future to many other atolls as well.
Are you there to record who they are before they go, or are you there to record what is in many ways clearly a tragedy, people losing their home and having to go?
I think it's a bit of both of that. I mean, the fact that the community are interested in having a record of their culture is a great thing, and it's probably clear to say that if this community do have to evacuate, their culture as it is practiced currently will die. So I think it's really important that we do give them a voice and record something now, but also I'm interested in the way that they are coping, responding to that change.
How will you go about this work? You've taken quite a team up with you, will you?
Well, it's not really much of a team, it's just two of us. And there's so many logistics that you have to think about. For example, there's no power on the island, so we've got to bring solar panels and generators and think about those kinds of things. I think one of the most important things is when we get there, I don't plan to pick up the camera for maybe even 2 weeks. I just want to get to know everyone and sort of meet people, find the right characters, and then start filming.
If I come back to you, Richard, that question I asked about whether it would be a Pacific community that many of us would recognise, in what ways might it be different, and what is going to be permanently lost because of this?
Well, the first part of the question. Yes, it is. It's an egalitarian society. All the houses are the same size and same design. Big fishing drives, and we're talking here thousands of fish. All participants get exactly the same number of fish, regardless of how many they themselves pulled out of the water. You'd recognise those kinds of values. What's going to be lost, more than just a small community of 600 people, it's a unique culture. In one sense it's priceless, and certainly it's irreplaceable. If they are relocated within PNG, they'll lose a bond to the land, and the land is the basis of everything. In fact, it's so strong, the individual islands and the atoll have names, they don't talk about them by name. They simply say Takohinuane, my home, literally my island. And if they're not on an island or they're somewhere else, that bond will go. Their history is there, the basis of their religion is there, the basis of their existence, that is, fishing in an atoll with an encircling reef, all of that will go, and it's hard to see how they would continue anywhere else to exist as a functioning community.
Are people realistic about what might be to come? Are they facing up to that? What are you finding in terms of their responses to what's happening?
This is a culture, Catherine, where the emphasis on historical precedent is all pervasive. In fact, the word for different is the same word for wrong. So because there's been no precedent at all about what's facing them now, they quite literally don't know how to approach it. You ask a question and you get a shrug or a don't know. What will you do? Don't know. Will you try and stay on? Don't know. It is simply and literally beyond comprehension.
Do they travel much? Are they familiar with Papua New Guinea or anywhere else around the island? Do they have a picture of the outside world where they might be now heading?
Most of them have travelled off the island for one reason or another, except for a few of the elderly residents. Yes, they've seen other means of obtaining food, other styles of gardening, other methods for catching fish. But they say that's not us. We do it differently. Is a very familiar phrase.
In terms of what this means for global warming, because we know there are lots of atolls in the Pacific facing a similar fate. What is the assessment of what has brought things to this point, and how quickly they may have to go?
I would think within a decade the island will be uninhabitable. There are neighbouring islands, also atolls, which have had to rely on monthly shipments of rice for the last 10 years. The Bougainville government has said, yes, they must be relocated. But their government has no money to buy land. The Taku community has been offered on Bougainville Island a disused limestone quarry to resettle, and they said thanks but no thanks. They've also more recently been offered a swamp. And these are people who have no resistance to malaria. There's billions of mosquitoes on the island, but they're non-malarial. And I think once they are relocated, they'll be susceptible to that. They'll also be susceptible to direct contact with several evangelical churches who, for the last 40 years, have been dying to, as it were, get their hands on them.
Will they move on, Matt, as a group, and at least keep the community together? Or is it going to be a situation where people will drift off bit by bit?
Oh, this is crystal ball country. It's very hard to say. There are enough expatriate Tukul people living throughout PNG, I think, to accommodate them. But if they did that, then they wouldn't have. They would lose the sense of community. They wouldn't have any geographical focus. It's just impossible to say now.
Briar, when do you head up there to do this documentary?
Well, it's one of those unknowns. We're relying on island time, and we don't really know when the boat will leave, but it may be on Monday this week.
So it's imminent anyway?
Yes, definitely.
And how long do you think you will be up there?
Well, we also have to rely on the boat that returns, and there's only 4 boat trips to the island every year, so we'll probably be there for 2 months or more. I think Richard once got stuck there for over 4 months, is that right? So I'm preparing for a long stay, and it's quite interesting at the moment because we're running around really working quite hard to get everything ready to go, and then when we get there we're going to have to adjust to a totally different speed. Mm. Yeah, and that's going to be quite a culture shock, I imagine.
You say no electricity there. I'm assuming there's no cell phone coverage there. How will you communicate with
them? Well, we will have a satellite phone, and that's probably the only way that we can communicate. Yeah.
How will you actually physically get there? Through Papua or...?
Yes, we fly to Brisbane, then Port Moresby, and then Booker, and then catch a boat from Booker to Taku.
Mm. Well, good luck with it. It sounds like a fascinating project, but regrettably in rather tragic circumstances. I'd love to talk to you both again in the future. Thank you for joining us.
That is
Briar March, who is making this documentary on Tuku, it is pronounced. That the sinking island that, as was described there by Richard, was completely washed over by a wave earlier this year. Richard Moyle is the director of the University of Auckland Centre for Pacific Studies.